And we begin this evening in County Clare, where a substantial archive of material, including documents, photographs and maps, has been discovered. It was the personal archive of Joseph Barrett, a member of the Irish Republican Brotherhood and the IRA. It mostly relates to his activities in Clare during the War of Independence and the Civil War. I'm joined from our Limerick studio by two guests. Dr. Paul O'Brien is an historian and lecturer at Mary Immaculate College in Limerick, and Paul helped to rescue the archive when it was offered to the local history society in Kilrush in County Clare. And Dr. Robert Hartigan is an independent historian and researcher who's been helping to assess and catalogue the material in the archive. You're both very welcome indeed to the programme.
Thank you.
Paul, begin by telling us, who was Joe Barrett?
Well, Joe Barrett was from West Clare. He joined the IRB in 1908. His father was an old Fenian. Barrett then joined the Volunteers in 1913. And by 1916, he was a captain in the IRB. Barrett was put in charge of the Guard of Honour given to De Valera in his first appearance in Clare in the 1917 by-election. And by 1920, Barrett was appointed to command the Mid-Clare Brigade. And subsequently, he was on the anti-treaty side with De Valera. His day job was as a rate collector.
OK, tell us then how you came to discover the archive of his papers.
I suppose from being in from West Clare, we knew that the late Mr. and Mrs. Barrett, that would be Joseph Barrett's son, Josh, and his wife, we knew that their house was up for sale. So I suppose we were keeping a close eye on the house. Now, we thought that we were probably going to rescue an auctioneer's archive more so than anything else. So we got a phone call last August. The house was sold. The vendors invited us to come and have a look at the archive. We took out about 250 boxes of material. We literally rolled out filing cabinets. And lastly, we went into the attic. And in the attic, we found about 7 or 8 old suitcases. And when we brought the suitcases downstairs, out came all of the military-related papers.
250 boxes?
Yeah, we reckon about 250 boxes, archival-sized boxes. The house was two stories over basement, and absolutely everything was saved.
That's incredible. And have any archivists been looking at this?
I have shown this to colleagues at work in Mary Immaculate College, and I've also shown it to Ken Bergen, in the Special Collections of the University of Limerick, and Kate Manning in UCD, and they've all been astonished by the quality of the material within.
Okay, the two of you have been going through the archive. Give us an idea of what you've discovered so far. What sort of material have you got there?
There's quite a mishmash of material, really. There's Barrett's personal papers. There's from the War of Independence in Clare. There's quite a number of papers. There's different missions that they went on in Clare. There's the anti-treaty official papers, government papers. There's auctioneer. There's a family auctioneer business. There's hundreds of pages of claims, rejections, appeal cases, correspondence with, I suppose, IRA men and women looking for pensions, and a number of these have been put up on the Military Bureau website. But
so this is people who would have been looking for his endorsement for their pension applications.
Yeah, to confirm that they were on active duty and active service. And, I mean, he helped, I'd say, extensively every one of them. And we did check the Bureau of Military website, and a lot of the Clare stuff, we don't know if they have it, and it hasn't been put up yet, but it's certainly not there presently. And like I said, the most interesting, I think, aspect is the official anti-treaty government orders or papers. They're really fascinating.
Yeah, because they come across like the orders or the papers or the documents of a legitimate government, and they would have considered themselves to be the legitimate government.
Yeah, I think that's the first thing that jumped out at me when Paul asked me to help with the archive. We were pulling out these papers and we didn't know what we were looking at, and it has official government headings, and you see Oglach na hÉireann, and I think when you think in the context of 1922, who exactly is this, you know, which group is this? And then as you get into the document itself, and you see language like the enemy have carried out acts of terrorism and treason, initially we thought, you know, this is pro-treaty, and then as you read on, you learn, oh, hold up a minute, this is actually the anti-treaty side. And like you say, this sense of legitimacy, it's there from the start. And I think, you know, when you look at the Republican movement since then, right way up to present there, it's interesting that that sense of legitimacy is there from the off in the documents.
And there are chilling lists in the archive of people who were marked down for assassination, weren't there?
Yeah, well, there's the Senate in particular, members of the Free State Senate. There's an extensive list. And the order actually says, if I can read from it here, it's dated the 26th of the 1st, 1923. And it states, from the above date, if any of our prisoners of war are executed by the enemy, one of the senators in the attached file marked A, and I must say they have marked A and F, so there's a distinction between the senators. So those who are marked A will be shot as a reprisal. However, they go on to note that factories owned by any of the above-mentioned senators will not be destroyed. So that's interesting in itself as well. They have to protect jobs and the economy. They're I suppose, aware of not turning the people against them. But there is an extensive list. I mean, most of them are, for want of a better word, a lot of them are unionists, a strong unionist voice. So you'd wonder how much of that comes into play also. But a lot of them are deputy lieutenants of counties, such as John Bagwell in County Clare, and so on and so forth. And I suppose here in Limerick as well, Lord Dunraven from the Adair Manor makes the list as well. Mm. So yeah, it is chilling to see it in paper. In
black and white, yeah. And also there's material relating to the anti-treaty leader, Liam Lynch, or I think to his death.
There is. There's a five-page typed document that was written or typed by a Free State soldier at the time who was there and who witnessed the event. So he gives a full breakdown of the skirmish and Liam Lynch's last moments. And I suppose an interesting thing that develops within is there's almost an argument of whether they should bring Lynch to a doctor, or whether he deserves to be treated by a doctor or to see a priest. And there's a bit of a dispute from various factions within, trying to deny him the treatment or to see a priest. In the end, they relent, I think, but it's a fascinating insight into Liam Lynch's last moments.
There's also a fascinating photograph, Paul, of Eamon de Valera and Charles Lindbergh. Now, you tell me it's Eamon de Valera, but there's absolutely no evidence. You cannot see hardly a square inch of his face, but it is de Valera and it is Lindbergh shaking hands.
It sure is. We are told that it is in Baldonnell Air Base, and it shows de Valera shaking heartily, I should say, shaking hands with Lindbergh and flanked by General Richard Mulcahy. And you're quite right, Miles, you can't see his face. However, the official photograph does show Lindbergh and de Valera. And I hasten to add, de Valera is in his full flight gear, whereas Lindbergh is just really wearing goggles and a very good suit. The photograph is signed Charles Lindbergh and dated 1936.
It is a very interesting photograph. I mean, Dev really looks as if he has been dressed up to the nines, as if he's been told by some of his flying buddies, this is how you need to dress for Charles Lindbergh, whereas Lindbergh obviously didn't bother.
Absolutely. I mean, he looks like he's in ski gear or something.
Yeah,
really.
Well, Dev looks like he's
white,
in ski,
yeah,
ski,
white
ski gear.
Wellingtons, yeah. And yeah. The works. But I guess the cameras were going to be there.
Tell us a bit about Barrett's life after the Civil War.
As I said, he's married in 22. He marries Bridie Ryan of Thurles. And then after the Civil War, he joins the Free State Army when Dev came to power in the 1930s. During the emergency period, Dev, or the government, appoint him as overseer, I guess, of the Irish Coast Guard Service. But post-emergency period, he retires really from duty, and he establishes a successful auctioneering business, which flourished really until his son and namesake Joe died in 2008. However, he remains, I suppose, these days we might call him a consultant. He remains active in that. He keeps a correspondence with Dublin about army drilling, army training, I suppose drawing on his vast experience as from the early 1920s.
Apparently there's also Nazi propaganda from the 1930s, yeah, in this collection. Do we know where did that come from? Why? What it's doing there?
Yes, you're quite right, Miles. There is Nazi propaganda there. There is a file containing material produced by the so-called Union for World Veracity. and propaganda material produced by Joseph Goebbels in 1939, which of course was very anti-Semitic, calling for the destruction of the Jews. How it came to be in the archive, I do not know. There are other hints towards German, I suppose, related material in the archive. For instance, there's a typed list of, quote, German internee students in attendance at university college science buildings. And there's also two documents marked secret. One relates to the description of the strength of German Panzer divisions, and the other one relates to the handling of German armoured divisions.
There was also... Now, we have no way of knowing who drew it, but in one of his personal Bibles, there was a swastika drawn. What's interesting is because during the emergency or the war, he was the head of operations for the Coast Guard. So it's interesting in that clearly there was some kind of Nazi sympathies going on, and yet here he is, the head of the Coast Guard for the Defence Forces. So
fascinating, absolutely fascinating. Where will this archive go, gentlemen, and who might use it?
Well, I suppose we are very anxious for it to be hopefully digitised and made available to researchers. I suppose it, as it relates to the West, we would be keen to keep it in this area. And with that in mind, I have been in touch with the librarian Anya Finucane in Mary Eye, and also with Ken Bergen in New Wales. So perhaps we might get some projects going whereby we could digitise it. However, that being said, as I said, I've been in touch with Kate Manning in UCD, and perhaps UCD might, it might be donated to UCD, but we're very, very keen for it to be made available to researchers. And it does beg the question, what else is lurking in attics in Westclare?
Yeah. That was going to be my moral of the story. Yeah. Search the attic, folks. Absolutely. You don't know what you're going to find.
And of course, we're going to publish on it. Rob and I are going to publish on it a couple of articles and perhaps a book.
But I suppose, it's so vast, and you just don't know what other material is out there. So we're eager for others to contact us and maybe work on collaborations. And like I said, just get the message out there, get the Barrett family out there.
God knows what, unfortunately, has been lost in some of these house clearances, but at least this treasure trove managed to be saved. So well done. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you both very much for talking to us today, Paul O'Brien and Robert Hartigan, to talk about that amazing archive of Commandant Joseph Barrett of the Mid Clare Brigade of the IRA. The archive is currently with the Kilrush and District Historical Society.